ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from the fourth canto, chapter 24, text 41. Pravithaya, Nivrithaya, Pitri, Nibhaya, Harmane, Nama, Dharma, Upak. Upakhaya Mrittave Dukha Thaya Cha Pravithaya Nivithaya
Pravithaya Nivithaya
Pitri Dhivaya Parmane Namo Dharma Vipakhaya
Namo Dharma Vipakhaya
Mritave Dhukadaya
Cha
Pravithaya Nivrithaya
Pravithaya Nivrithaya
Pitri Devaya Parmane
Pitri Devaya Parmane
Namo Dharma Vipakhaya
Namo Dharma Vipakhaya
Mritave Dhukadaya
Cha
Pravithaya Nivrithaya
Pravithaya Nivrithaya
Pitri Devaya Karmane
Pitri Devaya Karmane
Namo Dharma Vipakhaya
Namo Dharma Vipakhaya
Mritave Dukhadaya Cha
Mritave Dukhadaya Cha
Pravithaya Nivrithaya
Pravithaya Nivrithaya
Pitri Devaya Karmane, Namo Dharma Vipakshaya,
Namo Dharma Vipakshaya,
Mritave Dukhadaya
Cha,
Pravrithaya. Inclination. Pravrithaya. Disinclination. Pitridhebhaya. Unto the master of Pitriloka. Harmane. Unto the resultant action of fruitive activities. Namaha. Offering respects. The Dharma. Irreligious. Upakaya. Unto the results. Vrittave. Unto death. Tukadhaya. The cause of all kinds of miserable conditions. Cha. Also. Translation. My dear Lord, you are the viewer of the results of pious activities. You are inclination, disinclination, and their resultant activities. You are the cause of the miserable conditions of life caused by irreligion, and therefore, you are death. I offer you my respectful obeisances. So we can repeat. My dear Lord, you are the viewer of the results of pious activities. You are inclination. Disinclination and their resultant activities. You are the cause of miserable conditions of life caused by irreligion. And therefore you are death. I offer you my respectful obeisances. It's interesting in this verse because without the last line, I offer you my respectful obeisances, you could think that someone is finding fault, right, with Krishna for creating misery. It's that you've created death, you've created misery. That's what it's saying. You are the cause of the miserable conditions of this world. Right? And sometimes when we're in difficulty and we want to blame someone, we go right to the top and blame the highest person because, as we say in America, the buck stops here, stops with the boss. So go right to Krishna and blame him. You're in control of everything. So how did you allow this to happen? So here, the last line of the verse is indicating, obviously, this is not the case. But Krishna is being glorified and appreciated for allowing the freedom that we have to either make our lives perfect or destroy ourselves. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated in everyone's heart. And from Him issue a living entity's inclinations and disinclinations. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Who knows the verse Prabhupada's going to quote? Anybody? Trick question, because the way Prabhupada's explaining it is not exactly how he translates the verse. I'll read it again. Situated in everyone's heart, that's a giveaway. Sarvasya chaham riddhi sannivishtu. I'm situated in everyone's heart. Mata smritir gyanam apohanam cha. From me come smritir, remembrance, gyana, knowledge, and apohanam, forgetfulness. So Prabhupada here, using the Sanskrit pravittaya and nivrittaya, is using the words inclination and disinclinations instead of remembrance, knowledge and forgetfulness. He's saying our inclinations to do something or our lack of inclination to do something comes from Krishna. And that lack of inclination could be the lack of desire to be Krishna conscious. and the inclination could be a strong material inclination. The Supreme Personality of Godhead causes the asuras to forget him and the devotees to remember him. One's disinclinations are due to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh, so we're not responsible. So we can do whatever we want and there's no karma. You like that philosophy? Imagine if every day, once a month, there was a day in which you could do anything and there would be no karma. It was like a kind of perverted Ekadasi. On this day, you could kill somebody, you could rape somebody, you could eat meat, you could do anything and there'd be no reaction. That would be a dangerous day, wouldn't it? You think, what might you do on that day? Like, hey, here's the day. Asuras would like to think that there's no reaction. And this sentence appears that we can blame Krishna on our sinful desires. As the Christians say, when they do something sinful, they say, the devil made me do it. It was beyond my control, so I'm not responsible. According to Bhagavad Gita 16.7, who knows the verse? 16.7. Pravittim cha. Pravittim cha, nirvittim cha, jana navidur asura. The asuras do not know which way one should be inclined to act and which way one should not be inclined to act. Yesterday I was listening to a lecture and Srub Damodar Maharaj was asking Prabhupada how to preach to the Bengalis. He said they're difficult to preach to. He wanted to know the strategy. Prabhupada said, kirtan and prasadam. And then they got into a conversation. At the end of the conversation, Prabhupada was directing the conversation to the fact that people don't know what to do. And then Prabhupada said, all Shudras and Milechas. He said, everyone is Shudra or Milecha. He said, perhaps no one has said this before, but we are saying this. And if you understand Prabhupada's vision being this, then you can understand why he preached so strongly. Because he saw people had no culture. They were either Shudra or outside of Vedic culture. And then we're preaching to people, you're less than human beings. So perhaps no one in the whole entirety of human history has preached to the human beings that you're not even human. And said that this is our preaching. So here, Prabhupada's saying here, asuras do not know which way one should be inclined to act and which way one should not be inclined to act. So that's the definition of lecha. Lecha means one who's outside Vedic culture, doesn't follow Vedic injunctions, so they don't know what to do, what not to do, so they decide what they think is good and what they think is bad. Although the asuras oppose devotional service, it is to be understood that they are inclined that way due to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the asuras do not like to engage in the Lord's devotional service, the Lord within gives them the intelligence to forget. That's dangerous. Krishna is the most intelligent. Yes? So if the most intelligent person in the universe gives you the intelligence how to forget him, you're in big trouble. You'll never be able to remember him. Krishna is the best cheat, and if he wants to cheat, he can cheat us left and right. So it's a dangerous position to want to forget Krishna. Ordinary karmis desire promotion to Pitriloka as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita. Who knows the verse? 9:25. About going to the planets of the demigods if you worship them. Yanti deva vata devan pitrim yanti pitri vataha. Those who worship the demigods will take birth among the demigods, and those who worship ancestors go to the ancestors. Pitrim yanti means you go to Pitriloka, which in the original Bhagavad Gita was translated as the planet of the trees, because they misunderstood Prabhupada's translation. In this verse, the word dukkha-dhaya is also very significant, for those who are non-devotees are perpetually put into the cycle of birth and death. This is a very miserable condition. Because one's position in life is attained according to one's activities, the asuras or non-devotees are put into such miserable conditions. Srila Prabhupada was asked a question you may have thought of when you were a younger devotee, or maybe you still think of it. If Krishna knows I'm going to misuse my independence, then what's the question? What? He knows I'm going to use my independence, then why did he give it to me? Just like, you don't give matches to a 2-year-old child because they may misuse it. So it's a natural question. We're foolish, we're ignorant, and independent. That's a dangerous combination, isn't it? You have a big motorcycle and a 10-year-old child. You don't give them the keys. That's a dangerous combination. You have a sports car, you don't give the keys to a young kid. First time I drove my father's car, I got in an accident. I was 15 or 16, something like that. So, natural question. We're stupid. We're young. And now we're given independence to create all kinds of trouble. So if God loves us, why would he give it to us? What's the answer? Because? Well, we have independence. Okay, yeah. He's independent, we're independent. Why else? Love is not forced, yes. And there's another answer I'm looking for, which is in Bhagavad Gita. I believe it's the 5th verse of 7th chapter. The verse after Bhumir Apo Nalodvayu. What's the next verse after that? Yidam Ziyedam Daryate Jagat. And I can't remember the beginning. But I'll give you a hint to the answer I'm looking for. All your answers are correct. Yidam Daryate Jagat means the living entities are maintaining this world. We're maintaining it. What does that mean? I thought Vishnu maintained it. So the answer I was looking for in regards to this verse is, why does Krishna give us the independence? Because we want it. You think you don't want it when you ask the question, Krishna, why did you give me the independence? So try to live for a moment without free choice. Can you do it? You'll go crazy. You'll end up in a mental institution. When the British told Mahatma Gandhi, if we give you independence, you are not qualified to run the country. You'll destroy the country. He said, give us the independence to destroy it. We want our independence. Independence is so valuable. Even we'll ruin the country, we want it. Nobody can live without independence. We want it. So another question was asked to Prabhupada. Similar question. Maya. Why did Krishna create Maya? Doesn't seem fair. Would have been a lot easier if there was no Maya. Correct? We wouldn't be here, wouldn't have these bodies, wouldn't have all the trouble that we have in this world. Prabhupada said, Krishna did not create it. Who created Maya? Krishna didn't. We created it. Prabhupada said, Krishna did not create it, you created it. So that's the meaning of this verse in Bhagavad Gita, Yedam Daryate Jagat, that the living entities maintain the world. Why do we maintain it? Because we want it. If we don't want it, is it going to exist? Krishna's only creating it because we want it. There was a morning walk, and they were talking about children, bringing children into the world. At one point in the conversation, Prabhupada said, why do you want to bring children into this miserable world? It's a kind of a non-politically correct statement. I wouldn't recommend saying that at a Sunday feast to new people. But from the transcendental position, we are trying to get people out of this world, not in, correct? So, just like there's a fire in this room and we're all running out and people are coming up for class and we're telling them, get out, get out. No, but I want to go to class. No, you don't understand, get out. So, Prabhupada's saying, why do you want to bring people into this world? Because birth, old age, disease and death, not a nice place to bring people. So, this was early in the movement and this was a shocking statement for those of us who don't think like that. Think, you know, it's not that bad here, family life is nice, children are nice. So the natural question the devotees asked was, but Prabhupada, who can guess what they said? If we don't, yeah, if we don't bring children in this world, then there won't be a world left. To which Prabhupada said, who knows? Why do you need this world? So we think like there's some use here, you know. We're hoping, you know, in a few years the roads in India will get better and, you know, maybe they'll someday discover cars that can fly and there won't be traffic jam. And we have big hopes, don't we? We have so many big hopes for the material world. Or maybe someday they'll create a computer and you just snap your fingers and it becomes subtle. You know, just subtle energy and you put it in your pocket and like you see in the movies and you snap it and there it manifests grossly. And we have all kinds of hopes for life will be better and more comfortable. And maybe, you know, someday there'll be no mosquitoes in Mayapur. So we have it all backwards. And Prabhupada's saying, no one will come into this world. We think, oh, it's a disaster. And Prabhupada's saying, why do you need this world? You don't need it. It's only for people who want it. You create Maya. Krishna doesn't create it. So now, this verse and this purport is explaining how Krishna is facilitating, giving intelligence, incredible intelligence, how to remain in this world, life after life, and not even see, and not even get a clue that there's a problem. and not even get an ounce of faith that maybe, possibly, there's something better than this. You know people like that? Who get slapped in the face every day of their lives and they don't even ask, is this all there is? We meet them every day when we preach, isn't it? They can't understand. Supreme bewilderment of Krishna. It's incredible. We have a sarcastic saying in America. Maybe it's been exported to the other parts of the world. The American cultural exports is degrading the rest of the world. That's one of the great contributions of American culture. It brings other cultures down and causes terrorists to want to attack them, to say, please keep your culture to yourself, we don't like it. We have a saying, and it goes like this, duh! So when you say something which is overly obvious, and you're a little sarcastic, you say, well, duh. You say that in Switzerland? No, they're too sophisticated in Switzerland to say that. You look at life, you look at this world, you look at the bad deal. There's a bumper sticker in America that says something like, life is, maybe somebody knows, life is hell and then you die, something like that. So, duh, Krishna creates such a duh, it's a duh moment. We could call this, you know, living in the material world, it's a constant duh moment. Hello, do you get it? People don't get it. Why don't we get it? Or why don't people get it? Because they don't want to see it. Because if they see it and admit it, what happens? The fun's over. The party's over. Right? Have you ever given a lecture to new people about death? You think they like that? Think that's a good topic? Welcome everyone to the Sunday Feast. Today we're going to talk about death. But before we do that, we're going to talk about how miserable life is. You think they want to hear that? No. That's why the Sunday Feast, 10% of the people go to the lecture, 30% go to the kirtan, and 100% go for prasadam. Because as soon as they come to that lecture where they heard that life is miserable, they know that's what we talk about. They don't want to hear that. Isn't it? Isn't it a fact? Because they're trying to have a party. And when you're trying to have a party, you have to forget that you're going to die. You have to forget you're going to get old. You have to forget as much as you can forget. And when you're really good at forgetting, what's that called? Happiness. Correct? The more you can forget, the more happy you can become. Because if you remember, you're in trouble. So, Krishna knows this. Krishna is smart, he's intelligent. He knows this. He knows this is how it works in the material world. The more expert you are at forgetting who you are, what you're doing here, that time is ticking, that you can't be perfectly happy, that Maya will slap you. The more expert you are at forgetting these things, the more you can go into illusion that you're happy. So Krishna says, okay, if that's what you want, I'll help you. I'm expert at that. I'm expert in that department. And we read the verse that confirms Krishna's expertise. It's called Apohanam. I'm going to make you forget. So what does Krishna say in the Gita? In the Bhagavatam, second canto? Although they see, they don't see. Right? We're all looking at the same thing. We're looking at the same picture. We became devotees. Still we're looking at the same picture. Still sometimes we have doubts. Maybe I still can enjoy a little bit. So this is a danger. So Krishna comes along and says, okay, forget it. You forget it. Forget who you are, forget why you're here. Now that you forget, you can enjoy. You can go and enjoy. You can believe. You can be happy. That's what people do when they get drunk. Right? So the more expert you are at forgetting, then that's called happiness. Here's a story. A man had an important business engagement and he couldn't stay home. Even though his daughter was deathly sick in the hospital, he had to go because he was selling his business and he had spent years building up his business and he was flying or driving to another city to negotiate a deal, and once the deal was settled, he could retire. And they'd been negotiating dates, and this was the only date they could negotiate. But now his daughter's in the hospital, and she's critically ill, and he has to leave. So he goes to the meeting. And this is in the time before cell phones. He gets back to his hotel room, and there's a message that his daughter had died. Calls his wife. Calls the hospital. Said, your wife is gone. Calls home. She's not there. So somewhere in between, he panics. Gets in his car. He drives about 100 miles. He drives home about 100 miles an hour. Total state of shock and depression. He gets home and guess what? Guess what he sees? His daughter. They made a mistake. When the hospital called, it was another girl had died. And they called back the hotel, but he had already gone. You think he was happy to see his daughter? Think he was ecstatic? Happiness is the absence of misery. Is that happiness? I just made that story up. It didn't happen. But it illustrates the point. That in material life, happiness is the absence of misery. Right? This man was very happy, wasn't he? He was ecstatic. Actually, my wife just told me a story that a baby died at birth and was put in a refrigerator where they put them. And the parents, after like 12 hours, said, could we go see the baby? In the refrigerator, because they hadn't seen the baby. And they opened the refrigerator and the baby was actually alive. That's a true story. So you can imagine how happy they were to think their baby had died. And, yeah. So that was actually a true story. So now, Krishna creates this situation in the material world that things are so bad that when there's a lull, then what do you think? You think, oh, this is happiness. And because of that little bit of happiness, what happens? That's why we're here. That's the only reason we're here. Because that little bit of happiness in between all that suffering. And because we want it so badly, Krishna covers us to such an extent that even the suffering, we don't understand the suffering. Now, how does that relate to us as devotees? What's the problem for us? Have any of you experienced this in your life as a devotee? The apohanam, we can call it the apohanam factor. Have any of you experienced this? Have you ever experienced maya becoming attractive? Even when it's not attractive? Even when you know it's not attractive? And you're telling yourself, I'm really attracted to this even though I know it's not attractive. That happened to anybody? All right, let me ask that question. Has that not happened to anybody? Okay, yeah. The more we want to enjoy, the more Krishna says, okay, you want to enjoy, I have to make it appear to be enjoyable. Because if it's not, doesn't appear to be enjoyable, you won't enjoy it. Right? Just like, let's say you're very hungry, and you go home, and there's nothing to eat but three-week-old stale bread. Then you have to debate the pros and cons. Well, I'm really hungry, and if I eat the bread, it'll appease my hunger. But the bread is so horrible and stale, if I eat it, I won't be satisfied, and it all suffers. So you're going through the pros and cons, right? So it has to at least appear to be attractive. Right? If it doesn't appear to be attractive, then there's no impetus to enjoy it. Correct? Or just like when you're full, there's no impetus to eat. So, to enjoy the material world, Krishna has to create the impetus. So, Maya comes, creates the illusion, oh, this looks very enjoyable. And the example Prabhupada gave was, the dog comes and you hit it, say, get out. And then what does the dog do? He comes back. And then you hit it again, and then what does he do? Comes back a few more times, and after a while he gets it. So Prabhupada said, that is like our position. Oh, Maya creates it, it looks enjoyable, we go for it, and then we get slapped. And then slapped, and slapped, and slapped. Until one point, we realize, maybe this is not a good idea. Prabhupada said, the only reason we're suffering in this world, there's only one reason. Because we want to enjoy. That's it. Now, let's do a cost-benefit analysis. You know what a cost-benefit analysis is? You look at the benefits, and you look at the costs. The benefits. You get some enjoyment. And what is that enjoyment? That enjoyment you will learn about in the next chapter, 25. We know what the enjoyment is. A little sense gratification culminating in sexual gratification. Okay, so that's the benefit. We get it. What does it cost us? What are the costs? What? Birth and death, old age, disease. Can I ask any of the devotees who are over 50 if there's some part of their body that has pain? Could anybody say no? I think the first pains in my body came when I was like 32 or something. I think it's in the 30s they start. And unless you take care of them, they don't get better. So now look at the cost and look at the benefit. The benefit is a little chapala sukala, a little happiness here and there. And then they ask, they said, but Prabhupada, the karmis, they say, but we're happy. And Prabhupada said, I see you going to work at 7 in the morning and coming back at 9 at night. And you call that happiness? That's a duh moment. I'm happy. Oh, that sounds like happiness. 14 hours a day away from home, working. So you get a little bit on Saturday afternoon and Sunday. On Saturday afternoon you recuperate. And then wash your clothes and clean your house because you didn't have time to do it during the week. And then you could say hello to your children for an hour or two, and then you go to sleep because you're so tired early. And that's happiness. And for all of that, you enjoy with your wife or husband at night a little bit, and then you get to get old, die and take another body. That's what you pay for. So, who in their right mind would pay the price for that little pleasure? You know, you go to buy a bicycle, and they say, you say, how much is the bicycle? And they say, 10 lakhs. So you're some foolish American, you've never been to India before, and you give them 10 lakhs. Must be a good bike. They actually have bikes in America that cost about 2 lakhs. So it's the same thing. We're paying a very high price. And how is it that we don't get it? Because we don't want to get it. Because we don't want to get it, Krishna says, okay, I'm going to create such an illusion that even though it's so obvious, you'll never get it. Lifetime after lifetime, you'll never get it. I'll give you the Bhagavad Gita. You'll read it and still won't get it. Isn't it? How many Indians don't get it? And they have these scriptures, they understand it, and they still don't get it. So Prabhupada said, we suffer because we want to enjoy. So this just, if we just come to this point where we say, okay, Krishna, what you want, that's what I'll do. That's it. We're liberated. Finished. What my guru wants, instead of what do I want, Krishna, what do you want? Just come to that point. Business is finished. We're liberated. The illusion's gone. And then Krishna kicks in with jnanam. Because now you want to come to me, so I have to give you the intelligence how to do it. Because on your own, you're a fool. You won't be able to do it. So now Krishna kicks in jnanam. Upayantite, the knowledge needed to come to me, and then as soon as we show Krishna we want it, we get it. And then what does Krishna give us? He gives us the inclination to serve him. The inclination to come to him. Simple. Right? Just a simple desire. That's it. What did Prabhupada say? What does this Shastra say? As soon as you turn your back on Krishna, you face Maya. Simple, isn't it? As soon as you turn your back on Maya, you face Krishna. It's so simple. Isn't it? And Krishna helps either way. So how do you want Krishna to help you? To go towards him or away from him? Any way you turn, that's the way he helps you. How much does Krishna want us to come back? What did Prabhupada say? You take one step to Krishna, he takes how many towards you?
10.
He wants us 10 times more than we want. So if we just turn to him, 10 times more power in our bhakti. And if we're having trouble in devotional service, what's the trouble? We want to enjoy. Simple philosophy, isn't it? We learned that probably the first day we joined. And we're still trying to get it. Isn't it? We're still trying to get it. There's still some seed in our consciousness that I can be happy separate from Krishna, doing something other than just giving my life to Krishna. There's some seed of that. And Prabhupada talks about here, the last sense about the misery of the material world. Ultimately, we can best burn that seed if we transfer all our desires to realizing that people are suffering, not worrying about ourselves suffering anymore, and do something to help their suffering. And that becomes our desire. It burns up that desire to enjoy. Better than anything. Better than anything we could do. You can go in your mind forever, well, I can understand this is not enjoyable, but still I have the desire, but I know I shouldn't do it, and I have to have the determination, and really if I do it, I'll probably suffer. And you go through your mind, you know, and you go through this. When you're going through your mind like that, it means you're already caught by the modes of nature. Because you're just trying to figure out how to get out, and you're like, you're so tied up, you're struggling to find out how to get out. But if you simply think, how can I make other people Krishna conscious? You stop thinking about yourself. Your desire to enjoy, it doesn't matter anymore. You simply want to stop their suffering. And that's how a devotee is empowered to give others Krishna consciousness. There was a conversation with Prabhupada. And they were talking, it was going back and forth, I forget the context. And eventually the devotee said, Prabhupada, what do you want? And Prabhupada said, I simply want that everyone become Krishna conscious. That's it. That's the desire of the devotee. So the devotee's not hung up in, will I enjoy this? Will I not enjoy this? He's simply thinking, I want to make everyone Krishna conscious. That solves the problem. Boom, it's gone. Finished. Prabhupada said, unless we are helping other people be Krishna conscious, very difficult to be Krishna conscious. That's the solution. Thank you. Should I end or we take questions or both? What do we do? Is it too late? You could stay if you want. You can ask questions if you want. Yeah, if you need to leave, please leave. Thank you. And if you need to ask a question, then you can ask a question. Yes. There's a microphone.
Krishna is all powerful. He has the power to change what we desire. Why doesn't Krishna change our desires?
I thought that's what I just explained.
Especially the devotees, at least.
Because Krishna, he told Arjuna, said, Arjuna, here's the situation, A, B, C, D. I'm going to do everything. All I need you to do is just get in that chariot and fight. And Arjuna's saying, but Krishna, if you're going to do everything, why do I need to fight? He says, because that's the way it works. So, a lot of times, we pray to Krishna, but we don't act in alignment with our prayer. So that would be like saying there's a heavy table to lift up, and I say, Padmalochan, can you help me lift up the table? And you say, yeah, and I don't lift up my side. And you're looking at me. You're saying, okay, you ready to go? I say, well, could you lift the table? And you say, no, I thought you were helping lift the table. So Krishna's the same. You can't say, Krishna, please help me do this, and go to sleep. That's the example of Arjuna. The Prabhupada said Krishna wanted Arjuna to fight. So we have to desire, but not only desire, our actions have to be in alignment with our desire. And then Krishna says, okay, I will help you. But if the desire is lukewarm, we don't really make the effort, then Krishna says, I guess you don't want it. I guess you really don't want it. Call me up when you want it. Just like we're talking. You're saying, well, we like to meet. Would you like to meet? And I say, yeah, maybe. How about tomorrow? Well, I'm not sure. What about the next day? It's possibly. You don't get me to commit. So you get frustrated and say, well, I guess, you know, you say, okay, maybe later. And then you realize Mahatma doesn't want to meet with me. It's the same thing with Krishna. You have to show Krishna you want his service. You want bhakti more than you want other things. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said an amazing thing. He said, in the 14 worlds, there's nothing but the holy name. That's the realization we're meant to come to. What is that realization? That means, in this world, there is nothing that I see can give me any drop of pleasure. There's nothing in this world that I want. I only see this world in relation to Krishna's service. Otherwise, I see it as misery. So that's the realization we're meant to come to. And when we come to that realization, Krishna, it's only you I want. Please help me. Or, Krishna, please help me. Give me the realization so I can see there's nothing in this world but the holy name and your service and your devotees.
Well, sometimes we see that Krishna, like the wives of the Brahmins, when the Krishna and Balaram wanted something to eat. The Brahmins didn't do anything about it, but the wives did, and they got all this food, and they asked Krishna, well, we want to surrender to you now. We want to go back. We don't want to go back to our husbands. And Krishna said, no. And the gopis said, the Brahmin's wife said, but you said, you know, you you always say that the one that surrenders to you, you give shelter. So why are you rejecting us? So why does Krishna does this?
There was a devotee who lived far from the temple. Not too far, but far enough from one temple that she couldn't go every day. So she asked her spiritual master. He said, better you live far. That way you'll always think of the temple. If you live right next door, you probably won't even go. So Krishna was just, everything Krishna does with his devotees is only to increase the relationship and closeness. So by telling them that, he was actually bringing them closer, more into Smaranam remembrance and in some kind of separation. It's an important point. A devotee has faith if his or her desire is to serve Krishna. If that is the prominent, most prominent desire in their life, then whatever Krishna does to them is to fulfill that desire. The devotee has that faith. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains something very interesting. Would you like to hear? He's still awake. This is so nice. He said, yes, Krishna absolves everyone's karma, but if Krishna sees that a devotee has a mentality or a seed of mentality or a drop of a mentality that can cause him to commit a sin or other or varieties of sinful activities, he will create situations in his life to cause him to suffer in order to purify him of that mentality. In other words, if you suffer enough, if the dog gets slapped enough, you decide, maybe I shouldn't do this. Maybe this is not a good idea. Every time I touch this rasgulla, an electric shock goes off. There's an experiment like that, I think with rats or something. They touch a banana and a shock goes off or something. They get hit in the head. You know. Anyway, every time they touch a banana, they get hit in the head. So after a while, they realize maybe I shouldn't touch the banana. Right? So, Krishna will take some of our residual karma or create some situation where we suffer in order that we become purified of the inclination that's causing us, the seed that's causing us to commit that action. That's mercy, isn't it? We don't like the suffering, but we like the result of the suffering, because the result of the suffering will bring us closer to Krishna. So, a devotee understands whatever Krishna does, it's meant to bring me closer, and when we see ourselves suffering, we ask ourselves, what inclination is Krishna trying to purify me of by creating this suffering? Because I'm bringing it on by myself. I'm calling it to me, and Krishna, I'm calling Krishna to me to do that. So why is he doing that? What am I supposed to learn? If you don't like suffering, then purify yourself of all material inclinations and Krishna won't have to bring any suffering to you, other than the natural suffering that comes from the physical body that you can't avoid. But other than that, why would Krishna want you to suffer? You don't need to anymore. Unless you're taking some karma of disciples or like that. Is that... Yeah, yeah.
So sometimes we suffer because Krishna loves our disciples.
He's doing that to purify you. Yeah, it's all. Or, if we go outside of bhakti, then it's just our karma. So, but in either case, it's meant to purify us of the inclinations to commit those sins.
So how do you know when you're suffering because of your karma?
If you're fully engaged and fully surrendered, then it's only because of Krishna's mercy. If you're engaging in activities separate from bhakti, it may be creating some karma. But ultimately, I would say in answer to your question, just ask what you're supposed to learn by that suffering. What is Krishna teaching? What is material nature teaching through that suffering? You know, because whenever you try to enjoy something separate from Krishna, eventually it ends in suffering. So there's obviously a lesson. I'm not the enjoyer. And if I try, I'm going to suffer. Just like this one life member came and Prabhupada said, what do you do? He said, I make glass. Prabhupada said, where did glass come from? He said, glass comes from sand. And Prabhupada said, oh, you're a thief. because you're stealing Krishna's sand. And then devotees, and the man said, oh, but I give money to the temple. And Prabhupada said, oh, then you're just a little thief. So still some thieving is there. So some, we have to see, you know, inclination. What's the inclination? What's the sinful inclination? And so we are, I think it's important to understand that the propensity to enjoy is a symptom of two things according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. It's a symptom of the weakness of heart and a lack of intelligence. So both things are there and one affects the other. So we can meditate on that. You know, I'm not intelligent, therefore I'm weak. Or my heart is weak, I'm attracted too much to material things and therefore it's covering my intelligence. So they kind of work together. I'll have to repeat it because your mic's not on. There's a button in the, maybe there's three. Okay, the question's hard to formulate, but I think it's deep in devotees' hearts. Part of us wants to fully surrender.
But then we hesitate and say, oh, but I haven't enjoyed sufficiently.
And but we hesitate and say, I haven't enjoyed sufficiently. So we...
And I'm wondering, does that mean that there's something that we can enjoy here that can't be had in the spiritual world, that we will be spiritual and, oh, I missed it somehow?
So in other words, if I don't fully enjoy myself here, when I go to the spiritual world, I'll want to come back down and see the latest soccer game or cricket match or something. So there was, you know the story, I don't know if I told the story about, did I tell this story? Narada Muni says, Krishna, why don't you liberate everyone? Have I told that before? I just tell you, why don't you liberate everyone? And Krishna says, they don't want to go back. Narada Muni goes, how is that? And Krishna says, well, Vishnu and Narayan says, choose somebody. So he chooses somebody. He says, I'm coming from Narayan and he's offering you to go back. And the man says, thank you, could you come back in a week? My daughter's getting married. So Narada Muni comes back in his week, which is like a year later, and he says, Narada Muni comes back, well, the Vaikuntha plane is ready. And he said, but my daughter's pregnant, could you come back after? Just in a few weeks, she'll have the baby. And so this goes on his entire life, and then he dies. So I go back to Godhead. What if Vishnu comes to us too early? Then what do we say? Oh, my, you know, death comes, and you say, oh, but my daughter's getting married. Could you wait? Are we that foolish that we would say that? I hope not. The other side of your question is, yes, according to our material nature and conditioning, we engage it, not as enjoyers, but in Krishna's service, to purify ourselves of the propensity to. So we have a nature, so we can engage our nature. And that's a little bit different than enjoyment. You know, I have to enjoy. Okay, so, you know, there's grihastha life. There are things, there's in service that we enjoy more than others. These things are there, but it's all within a context of uplifting ourselves. But as soon as we put ourselves in the center, then we have trouble. Krishna has to be in the center, always. And we always have to understand, Krishna's the enjoyer, and I will engage my propensities and nature in satisfying his propensities and nature. And at some point, we'll come to a point where that won't even be a question, because we'll have taste, and the taste will be so strong, you won't even think about enjoying. It won't even be a question. So we have to engage our propensities wisely, So we become purified and at the same time associate with those who are detached from the things that you're attached to, and that will help you. And associate with those who are experiencing spiritual bliss, because then you'll see they are not attached to these things and they're happier than I am. They're not trying to enjoy these things, they're happier than I am. So we all need some basic comforts. We're not saying these things are not sinful. We need basic comforts, but we're not. We don't think, oh, now I have this, now I'll enjoy. This is everything. As I said before, everything is save the conditioned souls. That's the... The one sannyasi, my guru, he brought me into his room, and his room was beautiful. Big bed, gorgeous linens, gorgeous furniture, you know, and he was embarrassed. And he said, I have to live like this because I do so much austerity in preaching and managing. I just need this. So it wasn't for enjoyment. It was just so, you know, you need nice prasadam, you need a place to live, you need friends, you need these things so you can go out and do the austerity of saving the conditioned souls, not to enjoy. So if you say, okay, I need a nice house. What do I need? So I can be sane, so I can go out and do my service. Okay. So should we end? See, they never asked me to give class. This is the reason. I better not go too long. Yes. Who have enjoyed sufficiently?
Is there anyone who has
enjoyed sufficiently? Of course. The part I didn't address was, he was saying, I haven't enjoyed sufficiently. Pankajangri was saying, but has anyone enjoyed sufficiently? I don't think so. But then you have that, you know, that whole part of the Bhagavatam that if you don't enjoy when you're young, then when you're old, you'll regret it. So, you know. So, in Krishna consciousness, enjoyment according to Varna and Ashram. Some enjoyment, but you don't think you're the enjoyer. You know, okay, I want to get married. So you think, oh, I'm the big enjoyer, and you get married and you realize that you're going to spend the next 25, 30 years serving your wife and your children. So, you know, the big bubble of the enjoyer just gets popped, you know. I'm going to be the big enjoyer. You know, I'll have the house and the family. Yeah. Yeah, and you're out there at 7 in the morning coming back at night to support it. So... maybe we should do a little funny skit called Where is the Enjoyment? You know, where do they hide it? I haven't found it yet. Is it under the carpet? Is it behind the refrigerator? You know, where is it? The real enjoyment is in Sadhu Sangha, hearing and chanting with the devotees. Isn't it? That's it. That's the enjoyment. Coming together with the Vaishnavas. And if we get that enjoyment, then the other enjoyment, it becomes insignificant. You know, I was thinking, I was asked to give a, you know, I do japa workshops, but now next week I'm asked to give a workshop on japa and kirtan, and I've never done it so as with kirtan, and I was thinking, so what will I say about kirtan? And I was thinking, one of the things about kirtan is that you just jump into kirtan and immediately you like ecstasy, you know, 3 minute, you know, immediate ecstasy. You just like get it, you know, japa you might fall asleep or get bored, but kirtan it's like, so that's, and it's actual ecstasy, and Prabhupada said it is ecstasy. So that's, you know, that's what we need. Yes. Yeah. You had another comment? Yeah, they work together. Yeah, it's like a byproduct of bhakti. You develop all good qualities as a byproduct of bhakti. And when you get initiation, you make a vow to not do 4 sinful things. And one might say, well, why do you have to vow? You should just vow to chant Hare Krishna and then it'll come as a byproduct, which is true. But you have to give up something so that you have to control yourself. You have to give up something to get something, to be able to get to that point where all these good qualities manifest as a byproduct. You have to also renounce. So by renunciation, you get more renunciation, because you get more bhakti, which gives you renunciation. Right? So in the higher stages of bhakti, then you're in the platform of renouncing as a byproduct of your ecstasy or your taste. In the lower stages, you're renouncing more on the as a basis of knowledge and determination. Right? You want it, but I want it, but I'm not going to eat it. Right? And you're real staunch, you know, and hang out with the staunch devotees. I'm not going to do this. It's not good for me. But in the higher stage, you're not battling with it. You don't even look at it. It's not even a problem. Or even if you do it, it no longer becomes a problem, because you're only doing it to serve Krishna. That's the only reason you do it. So the lower stages is the hard part. The higher stages is the easy part. So the sooner you get to the higher stages, the sooner these questions will end, and you'll live happily ever after. Okay? Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jāya. Actually, I have to admit, when I was asked to give class, I thought it was the next chapter. I heard it on the phone and I forgot to. I only remembered the fourth canto and the 41st verse, but I missed the chapter. So I had a whole other class prepared.